Dr. Green, you've come to Alberta from Michigan. Perhaps you could tell us a little bit about your background and what you were doing before. What were you doing in Michigan?
Well, I'm a family physician. I was practicing there, of course. I was on faculty at the University of Michigan, where I had been faculty for 26 years. At the time that I left there, I was a professor and associate chair.
Now, you're here in Alberta, and one of the things that you're doing, you've just been appointed as an Alberta Innovates Health Solutions Translational Health Chair. What is translational health? What does that mean?
Translational health is the kind of research that I do, that I've done throughout my career. It essentially is turning what we know into what we do. We know a great deal about the best way to take care of patients with a wide variety of conditions. We also know that we don't really do all that well at delivering those things very consistently and at high quality and so forth. Translational research is the process of learning how to do that better, getting more consistent, getting more dependable, getting more patient-centered in how we get the care to patients. It means things like studying the best way to educate patients, studying the best way to organize practices. It means implementing practice guidelines. It means changing how we structure the whole delivery system if we need to. But basically, it all comes down to how do we take what we know, what basic science has taught us, and turn it into value for patients.
Now, you said that you were essentially doing this sort of thing when you were in Michigan. Can you give me an example of what you did there that would fit exactly into what it is that you're going to be doing here now with this new chair?
Certainly. I was part of a large team in Michigan. There were a number of us working in this area. Our team did things like study the implementation of health information technology. How do you help practices that often struggle with technological change implement health IT that can improve the quality of care? Many of these practices had very limited resources, didn't have a lot of tech support, didn't have big organizations behind them. So we studied how they could implement health information technology in the way that was least disruptive to their practice and that was the least likely to fail, frankly. We studied things like the provision of chronic disease management in practices. Having people, nurses, pharmacists, social workers, whose job it was just to work with the patients in a practice who had diabetes, heart failure, emphysema, etc., people with chronic illnesses that really needed maintenance, that needed proactive care. It doesn't really work out well for those folks to just sit back and wait for them to show up in the office not feeling well, because by then they're likely to show up in eMERGE or the hospital and to be pretty sick. We know that those patients do better, feel better, if you take care of them in a regular, programmed way. We also know that's not really what doctors do very well. So the approach is one of team-based care, where we have an office where you have a physician, nurse practitioners, nurses, pharmacists, folks who work together off a list of such patients in their practice, a registry we call it, and you have one person in the practice whose job is just chronic disease management. So we studied how you implement that in practice and how it works out, what kinds of tasks they should do, how they fit in the best, what kind of training they need, those kinds of things. We studied things like chronic disease management for diabetes, what things should be followed, what makes the most difference, those kinds of projects.
So what would be the benefit then, say from economic terms?
The economic benefit is actually pretty easy to define, and that's one of the things that our team measured particularly. We demonstrated that patients who are part of a team-based care approach like that have a lower what we call per member per month cost. In other words, lower total cost of healthcare. That really comes from them not ending up in the eMERGE or in the hospital as often. In fact, it usually means spending more in primary care, but there's such a great savings from them not being hospitalized. And of course, from the patient's perspective, that's a lot better too. Patients don't like having to go to eMERGE or be hospitalized because their heart failure got out of control. So you save money and the patients do a lot better.
And how do you implement that change? How do you get the support to make the changes that your studies have shown should be made?
There's the rub. that's quite a challenge, and it involves everyone in the whole chain of healthcare. Everyone from the medical assistant and nurse and physician in the office, all the way to the payers. Here it would be the ministry. In Michigan, it's the insurance companies. It's the healthcare policymakers. Everyone really has to be involved. It means the healthcare team learning new skills, learning new approaches, changing the way they work, reorganizing the primary care practice to be able to do this. It means payers and policymakers, frankly, getting a lot of the barriers out of the way, removing the perverse incentives that make it hard to do the things that you really should do, that reward doing the things that maybe don't need doing so much. It means changing what you pay for, how you pay for it. It means changing some of the rules about how healthcare is delivered and who has to do what. And again, it means learning a new set of skills.
You're going to be doing this in Alberta now. What are you going to focus on?
We're going to focus first on finding out what needs doing most. This is engaged scholarship. That means it's research that's intended to meet the needs of the people who are participating in the research. So rather than come in with our own agenda and say, we're going to fix X, Y, and Z, the first thing we're going to do is go out and talk to people and find out what X, Y, and Z are. We have a pretty fair idea. We know that chronic disease needs work. We know that patients with asthma could be better taken care of. We know that patients with heart failure and diabetes could be better taken care of. We know that blood pressure control could be better. And we know that all of those things are big deals in terms of their impact on patients, how long people live, how many complications they have, and how much they cost to take care of as well. So we have a pretty good idea that we want to look at those kinds of things, but what about them? Are those the only things? Maybe one or two of those we don't need to look at, but some other things we do. We'll first go out and talk to the people and really find out what it is they need us to apply our research skills to. We have extensive, very sophisticated research methodologies, but those are only tools. They don't drive what we do. They're tools. The needs of the people that we're working with drive what we apply those tools to.
What do you see as possibly being the challenges or the obstacles that you'll face in Alberta?
How long is this interview? In translational health, there are always challenges and obstacles, and you never really know what they are until you're in the middle of it, frankly. Translational health projects are they're action research. Oftentimes, you don't even really fully understand the question until you're halfway through trying to answer it. Now, we do know what some of the challenges and obstacles are. It's people getting used to doing things a certain way, and, you know, people resist change. That's probably the biggest obstacle, just people resist change. Other obstacles include things like the need to change how we compensate care, who does what, those kinds of changes in rules and procedures and structures and so forth. They take time. They take measurement. They're almost never right the first time, so we have to be willing to try things, evaluate them, change them, try again, which of course then means we need to have a good evaluation framework so that we really know how to evaluate the impact. And we have to have data collection in place so that we can tell what we're doing. Now, fortunately in Alberta, the ministry has already anticipated a lot of those needs, so we're well underway in developing an evaluation framework and in putting information collection, data collection mechanisms in place. So we have a bit of a running start at some of the barriers. They've already been partly chipped away, so they shouldn't be quite as hard to knock down.
And what kind of resources will support this?
Well, the translational health chair, of course. That's the most essential piece because that's the infrastructure. That provides the ongoing support that's essential for putting together a translational health program. Efforts like this are built on relationships. It's a laboratory, but it's not made of bricks and mortar. It's made of people. The relationships require trust. They have to be built over time and maintained over time. We're asking people to participate in things that change how they do things. That's a little scary, and for good reason, because it's people's practices, it's their paycheck. It's what they do all day. And we can't ask people to participate in experimenting with that unless they know us and trust us. unless we've built that relationship and earned their trust. And once you've done that, you have to keep it. So you can't do these projects by what's called helicopter research. Fly in, launch a grand project, disappear at the end. Nobody will participate in that, and especially the people who need it the most won't. So the translational health chair is critical because of its ongoing commitment over time. It provides the resources to develop a cohort of people and keep them engaged, faces that practices, faces that patients, faces that physicians and nurses know and trust, so that we can build this kind of ongoing collaboration. After that, we'll need resources for the specific projects, of course, and that means the usual academic activity of applying for grants and revising and applying for grants again and managing grants and publishing papers so that you can cite them and get more grants, and working with stakeholders who need specific work done, getting contracts to evaluate things, program evaluation, process assessments, all the things that we have the tools for and we have experience for and we've done for years. We know we can do those things. The key piece is to get that fundamental infrastructure down that lets us then be well positioned to get those grants and do those projects.
Thank you very much, Dr. Green.
You're quite welcome. Thanks for coming over.